The Angry Chicken is a production of Amove TV. Bookmark amove.tv for more gaming and esports shows. The Angry Chicken is directly supported by listeners like you via patreon.com/TAC.
Everyone, get in here!
Ready for action!
I've got the beast in my sight.
A podcast about Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft. This is the Angry Chicken.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Angry Chicken, specifically episode 346, in case you were wondering. You probably weren't. I'm Garrett, joined as always by Jocelyn, and we've got a lot of Hearthstone to talk about, which we're very excited and thankful for, because this may have been pre-recorded. Because we have Christmas Eve things to do, Jocelyn. All that eggnog ain't going to drink itself.
Exactly. I mean, everybody needs a little bit time off around the holidays. So, you know, we're going to take a little bit.
It actually ends up working so damn perfectly because we were convinced that on last week's episode, we were going to have the balance update to talk about. Turns out we were wrong.
We were very, very wrong.
Now we do. And that's what we would have talked about had we recorded live on Tuesday anyway. So it doesn't really matter. The show more or less is the same. We do also have a lot of questions from all of our fine listeners out there, either from the inbox or from the Patreon Discord, and a mix of the two. So we're going to have a good, fun holiday episode of The Angry Chicken here. And we're going to start it off by thanking those of you who are supporting us. If you like the podcast and you'd like to support The Angry Chicken, head on over to patreon.com/TAC. And as usual, we do like to get in there and see who the new patrons are. And we have one new patron in between Tuesday and obviously the pre-recording of this episode. So Christian Peters, thank you for being our holiday patron.
Yay.
Yeah, I was like, it's like you were wrapped up under the tree. That gets kind of weird.
That's really weird.
You could riff on that in ways that maybe Christian isn't into, or maybe Christian is. You know,
no judgments.
No, either way, it's fine, but we won't riff on it anymore. So thank you for the support. Head on over to patreon.com/TAC, get access to the Patreon Discord, a ad-free RSS feed, and other perks. Go check it out. But Jocelyn, I have the correct bumper this week, and I am extra super sure of it because we tested it just before we hit that record button.
So I'm going to laugh so hard if it doesn't work.
Let's get into it. This week's Angry Chicken Hearthstone news.
Good news, everyone.
Oh, no. The nerfs are here, Jocelyn. They came like a Christmas present destined to bring coal to Shaman.
Yeah. And I mean, like, we knew that Shaman was going to be targeted. That was not a big surprise. But I think what was a surprise was that their Galakrond remained untouched. That was a huge thing for me, like a kind of a sticking point with their Galakrond that I thought something needed to change, whether that was how quickly his battle cry upgraded, like from 2 to 4 to 8, that jump to 8 seemed like a little bit much, or the rushing minions that it created. You know, I thought maybe they should be 1/1s instead of 2/1s because it does seem like Shaman can control the board too much. So I was surprised that Galakrond remained in its, you know, launch state, if you will. But they did touch pretty much all the other ones that we mentioned outside of the wolves. And for some reason, poor Sludge Slurper. Like, what did that little Murloc ever do to anybody?
I think Sludge Slurper is actually kind of a smart change. I like the change of Sludge Slurper. And it's one of these things where I think it probably adds up to a little more impact than a lot of us give it credit for. Because let's be honest, most of us think of Sludge Slurper because we're like, yeah, lackeys.
Yeah.
Doesn't really go on much beyond that. But, you know, removing one attack from it, that can do a lot. Sludge Slurper can trade with most turn two plays and can even, because of the combined with the lackey it gives you, can trade up with turn three and turn four plays if it sticks on the board.
Yeah, with like kobolds and goblin lackeys giving it more attack. Yes. And yeah, letting it deal with stuff that's up to kind of like 4 health, which should be safe from a 1-drop. Like I understand the change. I just, wasn't expecting it this time, I guess. Like, I thought that this would be much more focused. Like I mentioned, the wolves, and I'm totally Dragon's Pack, I think, is what the wolf shaman card is called. Anyways, the one that gets +3/+3 if you've invoked twice. That's so powerful. So I was very surprised that that kind of dodged a nerf as well as the Galakrond. So seeing Sludge Slurper.
It is Dragon's Pack, which
Dragon's Pack. Okay.
I just called it Buff Wolves or Buff yeah. Doggies.
It's like Feral Buff Spirits on steroids over there, but
yeah, some serious roid rage out of there, which you know what that means. No, never mind. Nope. I'm not going to make that joke either.
I was like, I literally don't know what you're getting at right now.
It means shrinkage, Jocelyn. Shrinkage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes. Spay and neuter your pets, everyone, or just give them roids.
Got it.
Sludge Slurper, I think, is a kind of an inspired balance change. Although, as someone who still likes logging some games every now and then with their Murloc Shaman deck, I would like to say, what the hell, guys? Come on.
He's still good. He's still a good turn one play. The Lackey Generation, like you said, especially if you're going down the Battle Cry route with the quest or anything else, then Sludge Slurper is still, you know, perfectly valid to be throwing in your deck. So I don't think he's been nerfed to Oblivion or anything crazy like that. I don't actually think any of these nerfs kind of take Shaman off the table. I mean,
no, I don't think so either. And
it's still the top deck. Surprising kind of no one.
Yeah, something I didn't really get a chance to kind of wax philosophically upon on the most recent episode was the kind of the thought, the focus on the Shaman Galakrond being the target of the nerfs is I wanted to bring up the fact that there were a lot of other Shaman archetypes that came out of this expansion that were also running Galakrond that were not as problematic as the specific list in question. It was in the back of my mind. We spent over 30 minutes talking about just the fact that the nerfs were announced and how the meta, you know, the post Descent Dragons shift, meta was forming. Right. And I just didn't want to go any deeper because we had a lot to cover. But that was in the back of my mind. And so I just wanted to point it out here. Now we have a little bit more breathing room to talk, is that I was a little worried that they were going to focus the Galakrond because I'm like, well, there's these other archetypes that are using it. They're fine. It's just this one specific list that really doubles down on the Galakrond
mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Sludge Slurper getting nerfed is that is a surprise for sure. Galakrond not getting nerfed doesn't surprise me that much. What surprises me is Dragon's Pack. I cannot believe Dragon's Pack didn't get dinged. Because +3/+3, like that is 2 5/6s for 5 mana is ridiculous. Now that being said, Dragon's Pack kind of sort of actually with coin on curve got nerfed with the Corrupt Elementalist nerf. We haven't talked about this yet. Corrupt Elementalist now costs 6 mana up from 5. You and I spent a good amount of time kind of spitballing what we think a Corrupt Elementalist nerf could look like. And they kept it pretty simple. Just they tacked a mana on. And
which, I mean, when I was talking about the nerf, I legitimately thought that it could get bumped to 7 or 8 mana. So even at 6 mana, this still is super playable.
Yes, I agree.
If anything, there are just so many things in that 5 mana spot. This actually makes the deck curve a little smoother. Like I would find I was usually like probably slamming this one on 5 over some of the other turn 5 options.
Oh, definitely.
But you don't have to, you know,
especially if your goal was to invoke as quickly as possible. So you can have that turn 7 fully upgraded Galakrond. A Shield of Galakrond was your only other competitor at 5 that was actually going to invoke, right?
It was invoking. Yeah.
And why would you go for a 4/5 that gives you 1/2/1 rusher when you could just have 2/2/1 rushers and good Lord Almighty, you probably have a mutate as well. So you can turn your 3/3 into a 6-drop.
Yeah. But now, I mean, it almost smooths out the curve and goes better because you have the 4 mana 2/2 with rush that invokes, and then you've got your
I have 2 golden ones now, so I have so many golden little tokens being spawned. It's wonderful.
Yeah, so Devoted Maniac, and then you have Shield of Galakrond on 5, then you have Corrupt Elementalist on 6, and then you have Galakrond on 7. So, swoosh. There's your fully upgraded Galakrond. Easy peasy.
Yeah, but what it does make weird is by a roundabout way, kind of hurts your dragon pack, because a lot of times, I didn't have the perfect curve. Galakrond was nowhere to be found. I didn't have a Kronk. Galakrond was not coming down on 7, or at least I didn't have a lot of faith in Galakrond coming down on 7 because it wasn't currently in my hand, and I didn't have my Kronks to tutor out the Galakrond. And so Dragon's Pack was this way to get me there. And on coin, there were many, many, many games where I would coin on 4 into my Corrupt Elementalist so that I was guaranteed to get my doggy buff
five sixes,
on 5 of Dragon's Pack. And now that is very much taken off the board in terms of your backup curve is what I'll call it.
You could, though, coin out the Devoted Maniac on 4, play another Devoted Maniac on 4, and then have your dogs on 5. Like, there's still ways you can make it happen.
Yeah, but that's a 2-card versus a 1-card powering up.
Oh, I agree. Like, Corrupt Elementalist 100% made a lot of these things a lot easier, but I think even at 6 mana, like, it's still early enough, and I think HS early, obviously HS replay stats, because the patch just went live yesterday, so early HS replay stats still, you know, show Galakrond Shaman having no problems and dominating at the top. I think it's dropped like 2% win rate.
Yeah, it's important to note that if you are a fan of the meta page, which I am, there's no option to filter by most recent patch. It's still the only filter option is by most recent expansion, so it's still pulling in all of the statistics pre-balance update. So I want to say they usually have a most recent patch, but I think it needs to go for a day or two before that option gets added in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it did have... oh, no, you're right. It does only have latest patch, but you can click on it and check the win rate and how it's dropped. So from the patch went live on the 18th, and then it's now gone from... Oh, I guess it has dropped a little bit since the patch.
As I would expect it to. Actually, rather significantly. It went live on the 18th, you said?
Yeah, that was... Wait, what day is it?
Today is the 20th. And today's the patch the 20th, went live, yeah. Wednesday.
Yeah.
So that does make sense. So yeah, so it was cruising along on the 17th with an almost 60% win rate, according to HS Replay. On the 18th, dips down to 58%. On the 19th, drops all the way down to a 53% win rate.
Yeah.
So
I guess, yeah, it is being, it is dropping a little bit. It has been affected for sure. But I don't know. I think it's like, it's still a perfectly fine deck.
Yes.
And
I think it's a good thing. I hope that was their goal, and I hope it does land correctly, because I like this deck. I like this deck a lot. It was just it was just too powerful. Is what it boils down to.
It was way too powerful. Yeah.
There was too much value. There was too much power for the small amount of mana you were paying to do the things, and you weren't even getting overloaded for it, which we're usually used to in Shaman, and that actually would have been a downside with this deck, because there's not overload synergy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, say Dragon's Pack overloaded you, for example, that would have been a detriment, but it doesn't have overload.
So I kind of think, too, that the drop in win rate just over the past week in general has to do a lot with people targeting this deck, and the fact that the target for this deck, which we talked about on Tuesday, being mostly an aggro hunter list, that deck also has a really good win rate against things like Holy Wrath Paladin, things like the rogue deck that we talked about, the different variations that go along with the apothecary. So
yeah,
since Aggro Hunter lines up so well against all of those decks, and basically like Holy Wrath Paladin is being played as the straight up counter to Galakrond, but then you have other, like the rogue deck's really popular too, and Aggro Hunter lines up really well against all three of those. I think, it's a very, very viable counter to the meta right now. And so I think a lot of people are running it. And so the more people running counters to your deck, then the more your win rate's going to drop.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important too, looking at this win rate. Like, it was already on a downward slope.
Yeah, it was.
It kind of plateaued around the 60-ish percent. But from like the launch of Dragons, like on the 9th, it was sitting at a 70% win rate and then kind of plateaued around the December 14th to the 60% mark and stayed there until this week's patch.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we can definitely say the patch had an impact, but also we, the players of Hearthstone, started to figure out how to fight back a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I still think they needed to intervene, and they did. And
100%. Yeah, I'm not going to debate that at all. I think going in and nerfing some of these things was really important because it was way too powerful the way it was. That's why I wanted to put so many hours into it this past week, is because, you know, like, there's always the gut reaction of like, oh, just give players, you know, time to figure things out. But sometimes they do actually need to get in there and make some changes. And I think that was one of those times when we really needed things to happen.
We were all pretty sick of losing the Shaman already coming out of the Evolve meta. And there wasn't patience for this in the community. There really wasn't. Like it's important. Like, yes, it's very different. Evolve deck is very different from what the Galakrond Shaman is doing. But just kind of an overall fatigue with Shaman Stone, Mimi or not, it was real. So that being said,
I think that's a perfectly valid point. I think that if it had been any other class that had come out as powerfully in Dragons as Shaman had, it would have been anybody else except for maybe Warrior, because we had a lot of Warrior fatigue throughout this past year, but it definitely went away as we were in the Evolve Shaman Doom in the Tomb meta.
Yeah.
So I really think that, you know, if any other class had been on top as hard as Galakrond Shaman was, we probably would not have seen nerfs. But I think because Shaman had just been so strong for so long, and the combination of that Doom in the Tomb event with Evolve and the launch of Battlegrounds pushed a lot of people off of ladder, I think that, you know, they wanted to make sure that people were actually getting back into Standard and Wild. So they didn't want this like same class to just be doing the same sort of thing and, you know, rolling over everybody. So I think they might not have intervened had it been anybody else and let it go till after Christmas. But with it being Shaman, I think that played a big role.
We know they're not intervening because this Rogue didn't get messed with at all.
Yeah, Rogue didn't get messed with. Hunter didn't get messed with.
Yeah, Hunter is, again, everybody, if you didn't listen to last episode, go listen to the top at the very least, because we get into a conversation about how aggro decks are a force to be reckoned with right now, especially Hunter. Mm-hmm. Hunter is...
There's two versions right now that are really, really strong. There's a Mech Hunter version, which is still fairly aggressive. And then there's like full on face aggro Hunter, and both versions are really, really good on ladder.
Yeah. Face Hunter dropped a little bit. It's I think floating around the 55% win rate mark now. But when it first was added to HS Replay, cause they didn't even have it on the meta page. Mm-hmm. It hit with a 57%.
Yeah.
Which was at the time second only to Shaman. So, and I think it's still in the second place in that. And that's like real time stats. This isn't like what Tempo Storm does, where they take into account, like, if you are playing this correctly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything on HS Replay is probably going to be a little bit dinged by human error in their games. But
I don't know if you've noticed, Garrett, this is kind of an aside, but just since we're looking at HS Replay right now, on their homepage now, they have like a live data ticker, and it shows you like the results as they're coming in from the app of like all the matchups and like what the ranks were and who won and who lost. And it's this constant ticker of games going by. It's mesmerizing.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it has nothing to do with anything, but yeah, I went there for a second to go look at the meta page. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And then I just sat there staring at it for like 2 minutes. I'm like, what are you doing with your life? Move on, Jocelyn. This is weird.
There's nothing to glean from this. This is just HS Replay styling on you with how many people use their uploader.
I know. But it was just like, I feel like I could use it as like a meditation tool or something.
Oh, dude, this would just give me anxiety. This would not help me meditate at all. But yeah, aggro with the launch of Descent of Dragons was not getting the coverage and the respect that it deserves. There's some serious aggro decks coming out of Descent of Dragons. And if you are not into what Shaman or Rogue is putting down right now, take a look at this base hunter list, get out there, play Toxic Reinforcements, tweet at TAC Podcast saying, boy, Garrett really, really was wrong on this card. And I will say, yes, I was, and go win some games. It's crazy. yeah. So I am. Oh, we didn't talk about Mogu Flesh Shaper because it just, of course,
yeah,
it feels like to me this has been a problematic card for a while now. But Mogu Flesh Shaper now costs 9 mana up from 7. And sure, makes sense. That didn't seem like the biggest offender to me. But it, again, it all goes together.
Does it make sense, though? I guess, like, because, I mean, you talked about it on the show. Now, technically, it's going to be much, much harder to get a Mogu out for free. But you talked about on the show its interaction with Mutate, which I think is it's a card that didn't get touched, didn't get changed, is in a lot of these decks alongside Mogu Flesh Shaper. And that was one of the powerful combos that they and pretty much every other shaman were doing, whether you were doing Galakrond things or not. And by changing Mogu up to 9, then you're guaranteed a 10 drop off of the Mogu. And there aren't nearly as many low rolls in the 10 mana slot as there are when it was, you know, evolving up to 8. So, I mean, like, you've got your 8-8s and your 4-12s in the dragons. I mean, Shervala is one of the low rolls because it's a 7-5, but it's got so much other stuff going on that it's kind of fine. Or I guess, sorry, Shervala is a 25, not 10. I started by 10 plus and I forgot about the plus part.
Yeah, I'm like,
but then you've got, like, you know, 12 Deathwings, 10 Mechathunes. Like,
I guess it was something I just wanted to bring up because it is an important thing to note. But anytime you're pushing events later into the game, the likelihood of your opponent having an answer increases as well. So while, yes, I've brought it up last episode, yes, this does make the potential for high rolls and more stats more likely when you cast a Mutate.
There were just some real bricks in the 8 mana slot. Right. There aren't really any bricks in the 10 mana slot. Yeah. I mean, a 5-5 Pharos is kind of the worst.
Yeah, it's just that at 7 and how many tokens are hitting the board right now with Shaman, at 7 mana Mogu Flesh Shaper, it was very, very easy to get it out for 1 or no mana. And it happens earlier in the game. And I don't know, to me, that's more relevant than it happening later in the game and the roll from a Mutate having more stats on it. Cause I would rather have more chances to draw an answer.
I agree with you. I totally do. I just think that for the majority of my games, when I was playing as Shaman, I was, you know, like it was, you know, 0 mana to get my Flesh Shaper out, but that's because it can't go any less. You know, like I, especially with the Face Hunter with the 3 Leper Gnomes and, you know, the mirror matches as well, there were always some pretty big boards in terms of like just tokeny things. So maybe that's just the meta that we're in right this second, but I don't think that getting this down to 0 or 1 mana is going to happen all that much later. I do agree. Obviously, this adds more conditions to it, but I think that, you know, I was playing my Flesh Shaper with boards that were more than enough to discount it to 0. So I don't know how much this actually delays it.
Doesn't matter because your opponent's just going to play Necrorium Apothecary on 3 with a coin. Yeah. You're going to lose the game.
Or I'm already dead. Thanks, hunters.
Oh, that too, actually, is a really good point. And that's the kind of thing. That's why I think it all matters because the power level of other decks in the ecosystem right now, they're scary. Hunters very likely will kill you before that Mogu Flesh Shaper is a relevant problem. And rogues, their minions are just going to be a lot bigger than really anything, that you just,
yeah, you're not
going
to be able to get
into
the trade
and they probably have charge. So who gives a crap? You're dead.
Yeah. So,
if
I mean,
you can't tell, I'm very cranky about rogue.
Obviously. Yeah. So I do like, I think these are all, needed nerfs. They maybe didn't target the things that I thought they were going to target, but I think overall it did slow Shaman down somewhat, which I think is enough for its counters to be a little bit more reliable. So
I think
good for the meta.
And yeah, I do think it's good for the meta as well. Where's your head at with Rogue, because I don't want to just sit here and be a crabby old man on right before the holidays. I don't want to be the Grinch or the Scrooge of Hearthstone holidays, Jocelyn, but I am super cranky and like arms in the air over what I see as a lack of foresight in this balance update regarding Rogues. Where is your head at?
They definitely had a chance, given that they were putting a balance update out. They had a chance to potentially target some stuff that could become problematic after Shaman was changed. Now, I understand them why they didn't do it, because basically they're all on vacation now. It is the holidays. They've, you know, basically said their offices are closing as of today, and they'll be back in the new year. So I understand wanting to target Shaman to allow people to play around with the new cards and potential new decks a little bit more without actually nerfing things into the ground before they have a chance to kind of take over. Like, I agree, Apothecary, problematic, but he's also something that's new, and I think maybe they just want to give people a chance to play around with it. Like, I don't know. I find, like, Shaman had been oppressive. Rogue is powerful, but I'm not running into Rogues in every single one of my ladder games. I'm running into Hunters in every single one of my ladder games. So I'm less annoyed at Rogue right now. And I think, you know, giving them a chance to have some time, cool. I mean, I think I would rather maybe Priest be, you know, have the card that is super problematic and that is going to make them super powerful, because it's been a long time since Priest has been on top with anything other than combo. So if they got a cool card this expansion, I'd probably be more stoked. Right now on Rogue, I'm kind of, yeah, okay. But, you know, if we don't do something about it kind of mid-January, I might be upset.
Yeah. See, the thing is, like, the it's not running away with the win rates. Like, if you're looking at stats, it's not out of this world. It's nothing crazy. So I don't think there's a big outcry. And also, historically, Team 5... They live behind those stats. They're like, oh yeah, everyone absolutely hates this and are probably not playing the game anymore because of an interaction feeling terrible. I think there's maybe two wild players left because it took them so long to do a damn thing about Barnes. but I just disagree. Like how long, it's coming from so many different places. One, it just feels bad. I don't like feels bad in my Hearthstone. And they've said in the past that they do account for that, although it takes them forever, I think, to account for that. Mm-hmm. And B, I just get sick of talking about it. Like Barnes came, I felt like once a month we would get it would just be like, oh, here comes the Barnes emails. They would all come in around the same time. and we have nothing. We never had anything else to add, but we're just like, yeah, statistically, it's not winning every single game, but it doesn't matter, because when it does win, it feels like there was nothing you could do and the game was decided. Yeah. And that's exactly how this Rogue deck feels. And I've been here a million times before. We have been here a million times before, and I'm just sick of it. I don't care. Like, out the door. It feels like ass, and you should do something about it.
Fair enough.
That's kind of where it's at. Like, historically, like, we've seen this so many times in Hearthstone. I can see the Ixar tweet in my brain. It's at some point. We're keeping an eye on it. Its win rate is currently not that bad, or something along those lines. We can Mad Lib an Ixar tweet right now. so in that regard, it's hilarious when they don't get their Necrium Apothecary, because it just kind of feels like they can't do anything, because I know what's in their hand: Wisps and Boars. Like, congrats. What are you going to do with that? But when they get it, it's just like, well, I guess I die now.
Yeah. So. Well, and I can definitely understand that sentiment. And I think that it's a combination of this happening many times over the history of Hearthstone, coupled with the fact that Team 5 has seemed so agile over the course of 2019. That now maybe your expectations in terms of like how quickly they're going to move on things, particularly in standard, might have changed a little bit to the point that you're like, hey, why isn't this happening? Like, you guys are doing a balance patch within a week of an expansion. Why isn't this, you know, let's go and change the thing that is obviously shouldn't have made it out of testing. Like, this feels really bad. And they just didn't do that. And I mean, it could be, like I said, that they just want to see how this kind of settles out. But because Rogue obviously isn't as oppressive as Shaman was, but I can totally see your this feels bad argument, Garrett, like 100%.
Flashbacks. I'm just having flashbacks. Credit given where credit is due. You're damn right. They have been super agile this year, although like a combination with like the exhaustion of something like Barnes or other offenders from the past. It's probably also coupled with the Evolve thing. Like I still like don't forgive them for Evolve. I'm just like, come on, just remove it. I don't care if it's part of an event and it's here for a limited time. In that way it's out. And I think I am being unfair, cause I have been really happy with this year overall. It's probably the next step, frankly, is I've seen this conversation talked about a lot, but it's like, it's such an imperfect request, or I think somewhat unreasonable if request is to have better foresight. I think that's what we as a community are kind of hoping comes next, right? Because they've been pretty good about the speed at which they start to make adjustments to the game, and don't even get me started on Battlegrounds. They're doing a hell of a job over there. But for standard Hearthstone, I think they've done a really good job. I think the conversation is probably going to lean in that direction more and more in terms of requests and complaints from the community. It's like, oh, why didn't you? We hear it all the time. It's like, how did they not see this coming? How did they not find this in testing? And it's like, well, yeah, they do have quite a few testers, but it's still a really small group, right? Compared to,
I think when it's Cora said it was like her and Chalky and Reels. and they just hired Cora.
Yeah, I do believe a lot of like Blizzard employees internally get to play with like pre-launch builds.
Yeah, I guess Cora's final design, right? So
yeah. It doesn't matter. Like if everyone at Blizzard was required to log 50 Hearthstone games a week, that still would pale in comparison to what they get in data
when things go live.
It's like not even close. It is such an ocean between the two. That's where I go. It's like, it's kind of unrealistic and it's this weird thing. And other games, you know, sort of have this. A lot of people always bring up Ice Frog in Dota. It's like, oh, there's this one person with vision. And it's just like, yeah, it doesn't, you can't expect that for every game. It's kind of an anomaly there. And even Dota screws up sometimes. So yeah, I don't know. I can understand the conversation going that way. I'm not sure how helpful it is or it isn't, but this is a moment where I kind of go, oh, come on, you know, it's a problem. Let's just do something about it. So yeah, it's a feeling thing for sure. And I think it's important to call it out as such. Even if I'm leaning into it and saying, oh, this is ridiculous, hands in the air. So
yeah, I think when I looked at HS Replay today, Necrium Apothecary was in just over 10% of decks. So it's
all decks
still,
or rogue decks? Because if it's rogue decks,
Yeah, all cards, all decks being played in Hearthstone right now, the Apothecary is in 10% of those decks. So it's still not like, I mean, Faceless Corruptors, I think we're over 50%. Faceless Corruptors were over 50%. And then like Ziliax was like 40%. Yeah, so, yeah, you know, there are other cards we're seeing more often, which I think is also part of their equation. Is it like, it might be in 100% of rogue decks. That might be the archetype they're playing. But in terms of like how often you're seeing rogues on ladder, you know, like rogues are 10% of the ladder, basically, if you assume Apothecary is in all rogue decks. So maybe that's part of it too. You know, the win rate isn't crazy and, you know, it's only 10% of the ladder, so they're leaving it alone for now. But you're right. Like when you do cue into that rogue, you're just like, well, crap.
Yeah, that's really the beginning and the end of it for me. It's just that feeling. We didn't really talk about Faceless Corruptor, but it did get nerfed. It went down to 4 attack from 5. I think it makes still a big good. Difference. It's still good, but it makes a big difference. There's a lot of things it now doesn't trade into. And it's not as big of a threat if it's left behind, unless you're a priest and you're not running your in between removal.
Yeah. But yeah, it's still good. I mean, you can still turn a totem into a 4/4 rusher. So,
oh yeah.
Or yeah.
Or my now 1/1 sludge slurper that's no one's afraid of.
Yep. Yes. It basically means, and like I said, Faceless Corruptor specifically is in 50% plus decks on ladder right now. So basically when you've like gone past that, that 5-mana turn, then you're heading into the 5-mana turn, I guess you have to be like always clearing the board. Otherwise anything you leave behind is going to probably turn into a 4/4 rusher, whether that's a little totem, whether that's a minion that's, you know, going to be able to get a trade and then get transformed afterwards. Like, it just, because I think that to me is like the biggest offender isn't necessarily turning one of your small things into a bigger thing. It's more so that like you can take something that is fairly big, you can get a trade, and as long as it has enough health to survive, then you basically buff that health from like 1 or 2 up back up to 4 again. So it's just a minion that gets to stay on the board for your opponent, which then in turn, I think, starts to feel bad. And, you know, you just need that extra bit of more removal, where before, maybe if you were a mage, you could ping it down or whatever, but that's not going to work anymore once it has 4 health again. So
it's
like, it's almost like a heal built in, right? Plus it can rush, so the cat can attack twice. Like, it just, I don't know.
It's
good.
It's essentially 8 damage from hand. Strictly as removal. It's not guaranteed to get a face. But like 8 damage removal from hand the turn you play it. Caveat of needing something else on the board to get the extra 4 damage, but it's still good. I still like it. I think it's a healthy thing for the game. I like it in the same way I like Zilliax. I don't mind it when a card becomes somewhat ubiquitous, because it kind of locks the meta into my brain in a historical fashion. I'm going to look back on Faceless Corruptor as a pie slice in Hearthstone's meta, in that we're all kind of playing around it in the same way we've been all playing around Zilliax for over a year now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's healthy. I think it's good. Much like Giggling Inventor, they did adjust it. I like the adjustment. I think we're still going to see a lot more Faceless Corruptors across multiple decks, unlike Giggling Inventor, which once they nerfed that, kind of disappeared, except for a few very specific decks that really wanted to stall. So I think this is a good change. I think it's a good change. I think it's balanced. I don't think they murdered it. They didn't take it out back or anything.
Yeah.
It's
this isn't Warsong Commander, guys. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just like... like De Niro behind it with a baseball bat. It's the end. It's the end for you, poor Warsong Commander. But anyways, before we get to the other part of this patch, which is the Battlegrounds changes, which will be in our new Battlegrounds segment, we have a sponsor to thank today, Jocelyn, and it's HelloFresh. They are sponsoring this episode of The Angry Chicken. I'm assuming you like eating. You a fan?
For the most part, yeah. In general, especially around the holidays. Woohoo! Yeah,
I mean, I like eating as well, but I don't like trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to cook and then going out and putting on clothes so I can go to the grocery store. It's just a...
Yeah, if there's anything I hate more than cooking, it's pants. So...
Yeah, pants are no fun. No fun at all. But it's great because I've got HelloFresh. They make cooking delicious meals at home a reality, regardless of your comfort level in the kitchen. You got pictures, you've got pre-measured ingredients. All of that comes straight to your door. It also helps you break out of your dinner rut. HelloFresh has 20 plus seasonal chef curated recipes each week. That is a lot of choice every week, Jocelyn. What do you feel like eating? I'm a big fan of their burgers. Have you had some HelloFresh burgers?
I have had some HelloFresh burgers. They normally put some things on their burgers that I would never, ever think would go on burgers, but they're delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, hey, stuff some cheddar cheese in your burger patty. I'm like, you're a madman, HelloFresh. You're a madman. Oh, this is really good. It gets all steamed. Yep. You ever had steamed cheese? Like, it basically steams inside the meat and you get this beautiful, silky, almost Gak-like. If you played with Gak as a child in terms of its consistency.
That's a real big throwback.
Yeah. Come on, Nickelodeon kids. We're a little bit of an age difference between us, but not that big of an age difference. I know you know what I'm talking about, but it's just
I do.
It's the best. Their burgers are fantastic. They've gotten me just completely obsessed with orzo. There's so many different meals with HelloFresh that just stick out in my brain. Parmesan crusting my chicken before I saute it in a pan and then finish it in the oven. Oh, so good. So delicious. Check them out. You can also add extra meals to your weekly order, as well as yummy sides like garlic bread and cookie dough. And you can easily change your delivery days. This is one of my favorite things because we both travel a bit, Joss.
Yeah.
So you can change your delivery days if you're not going to be home 1 week. You can change your food preferences. You can even skip a week whenever you need. At HelloFresh.com or right from the app. It's fantastic. So go check them out. And you can also get 9 free meals with HelloFresh by going to HelloFresh.com/TAC9 and entering the code TAC9. It's the same slash URL as it is code. Again, that's 9 free meals from HelloFresh when you go to HelloFresh.com/TAC9 and enter the code TAC9. We thank them for their support, and I'm frankly making my pre-holiday cooking significantly easier. And we thank you for going to HelloFresh.com/TAC9. Enter that code TAC9, everybody. Now, Jocelyn, are you ready for a still pretty damn new segment?
Oh, I'm ready.
Have a good battle, friend.
So also in this balance update, we have a pretty noteworthy update to Hearthstone Battlegrounds. I have finally gone.
I was shocked when I read this stuff, dude. Like
shook, Jocelyn. My world.
They took everything that I knew about Battlegrounds and then they were just like, nope, we're changing it.
Not quite. Remind me at the end. That's how I felt, Gary.
Don't tell me how I feel.
I have a nitpick at the end. I have a roguelike nitpick. All right. At the end of this Battlegrounds discussion. Anyways, quite a few minions in Battlegrounds are moving around, and I really like a lot of these changes, Jocelyn. First of all, there's a lot of minions we're going to start seeing a lot sooner in our Battlegrounds drafts, starting with the Boogie Monster. The Boogie Monster, which I always just want to call John Wick, was moved from Tier 5 to Tier 4. I like this.
I never take him.
You're damn right you don't, because why would you? Why would you take the Boogie Monster unless you're discovering a tier 5 and you have two other just horrendous options?
Yeah.
Which I will say, I have had some games where I definitely cracked top 4 off the back of a Boogie Monster that maybe because of its 5-star actually killed someone that probably would have stayed alive otherwise and got me into there. But then I just died and definitely went out at in fourth place because Boogie Monster is not surviving anything past that point. And that might actually be hurt a little bit by the fact that it has one less star and therefore doing one less damage if it survives on board and you win the round. But I like this a lot Boogie Monster is one of these bad minions. Sorry, Boogie Monster, but for sake of expediting this conversation, let's just refer to it as a bad minion. Boogie Monster is one of these bad minions. I get really excited when I have to make it work. Like, I'm like, oh, damn it. Oh, God, Boogie Monster, I guess. And you get it out there. And, you know, it's that mid game and it actually gets a few kills. And you're like, oh, damn, Boogie Monster's really cool when it actually works and no one has poisonous yet. But they're going to get it. They are going to get it. But that's okay. It is okay in Battlegrounds to have minions around that have a shelf life. And Boogie Monster is one of those minions. And now you can actually take it off the shelf when it is more appropriate. You know, around that tier 4 area. I like this change a lot.
Yeah, me too. I feel very much the same as you, because I think the biggest thing that I need to learn in Battlegrounds is the idea of shelf life, is that, you know, it's okay to sell some stuff, because I find particularly if I've made a triple, I'm like, I can't sell it. It's golden. It needs to sit. Like, I put so much work in to make that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had to get over that one pretty quick. That's a good tip, actually, is like, no, sometimes the goldens, like, are literally your only, their only use in this life is to give you a discover from the next tavern tier up. Like,
yeah,
don't worry. Like, do you know how many golden shielded mini bots I've sold in my life, Jocelyn? It's getting pretty high. Like, I love those guys. They carry me through the early game sometimes, but then out of here. What are you doing? Do you know how many other ways I can get divine shield? What do you think you are?
It's very much like a trying to kind of find that balance between, you know, what minions, even if they're triples, belong in what parts of the game. And I think that this change to Boogie Monster, and we're going to talk about it in a second, but there's a lot of these changes basically that seem to put minions into their correct phase of the game, if that makes sense. And I think that will help players like me specifically, where this is my first auto battler. It's going to help me a lot to learn more about tiers and, you know, what belongs in what part of the game, because I would see that come up in tier five and I was just like, so this is a good thing, right? Like, this is a good minion. It's a five. I need, like, if it's a five, like, five and sixes are my late game stuff. So there should be a way to do this, and I'm just doing it wrong, is how this made me feel originally.
Yeah. Well, and frankly, with one of the other changes, let's call it the universal poison, is going away. So Boogie Monster might actually have a little bit more power because of some of the other changes here. Now, unfortunately, Murlocs aren't going away, so I don't think you're going to win a game with Boogie Monster, but we'll see what happens. Speaking of going from tier 5 to tier 4, that's also what happened to Meccano Egg, which is a minion I have had like a tumultuous high school relationship with, where I have slowly just fallen out of love and having to come to terms with that fact with Meccano Egg.
I feel very similar about Meccano Egg too. I do like mechs, and more than mechs, I like death rattles. Building death rattles with like Baron and finding those triples and stuff, which I find the mechs usually have the best death rattles. It's my favorite build in the game, whether it full on wins me lobbies or not. That's where I find my fun in Battlegrounds is picking things like the Sky Golems in particular, because I find that the Sky Golems are pretty much
you and your Sky Golems.
The three. Freaking love the Sky Golems, man. They drop tier 4 minions. Those are just objectively better than legendaries.
Do you have like a shrine in your closet with like a bunch of candles and artwork for Sky Golem on the wall?
100%. Doesn't everyone? Well, you should. I love the Sky Golems.
Minus of Junkbot, but okay.
They're so fun.
Fair.
And I feel like if I'm trying to build something that's going to like synergize well with like a Baron or a Khadgar and my Sky Golems love, then Meccano Egg fits into that playstyle and board really well, or it should. But by the time I get to tier 5, I'm very much starting to think like, I don't have time to do this. Like it showed up too late, so I couldn't really fit it in well. But moving it down to tier 4, I might actually start to get it when I can use it better. So yeah, I am all aboard the Meccano Egg train now. He is going with my Sky Golems and my Khadgars, and it's going to be glorious.
Baron's going to be like, oh, there's already one here. This is wonderful. Supposed to dig in for it. Yeah. I like this change as well. I'm probably more excited about Boogie Monster going to 4 than I am Meccano Egg going to 4, but this is good for both of them.
That's okay.
It'd make a lot more
sense. You tell everyone the Boogie Monster is really good. Everyone will pick Boogie Monster and they'll leave all the Meccano Eggs for me.
But then my Boogie Monster will attack into your Meccano Egg and get buffed because it will kill the egg. And then by the time it swings into your dragon, it will kill the dragon too.
Whatever you need to tell yourself, Karen. You keep telling everyone about the wonders of Boogie Monster. Let's do it, Joss.
We're
going
to
duo queue.
We're going to have to fight each other. It happens. It happens.
Yes, we've only done it. I love this idea.
We've only duo queued once, and I creamed you, and I felt terrible. You got unlucky, though, because we were talking.
Yeah, I did.
And I was like, what's your draft? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Although deep down, I was just like, that's what you get for your golden legendaries every time we crack packs together.
Yeah. My Joss pack luck definitely does not carry over into Battlegrounds. No, that's for sure.
Mercifully. There's an end to your luck. The beast. If you want to get your Finkelein horn on, you're going to be able to do it a tier sooner now. The beast is going from tier 4 down to tier 3, making room for that Meccano Egg and the Boogie Monster making a home in tier 4.
Does anyone ever pick this?
No.
Will anyone ever pick this?
I have actually.
Like,
I think
9 attack on tier 3, I feel like is really good.
I can definitely think of one game. I think I may have had two games in the entire history of me playing Battlegrounds where I picked the beast. And it was, things were going poorly.
Yeah.
Very poorly. And I just needed attack. And it was cool. I think it won me like 3 rounds. It kept me in the game definitely longer. And then it immediately fell off. And all I was doing was sending another minion over to my opponent's side of the board. But
yeah,
this is another one.
Very much one of those shelf life ones, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, would you,
I'm learning.
Right. Cause it is, it's a beast. You're not going to be giving it divine shield, which is kind of what you need. Cause you don't want the beast to die. You do not want to give your opponent that extra token. I mean, I guess you're like, your best case scenario is the beast trades with something on their side of the board that has a death rattle that would stop them from getting, you hope the beast dies and their board is full, which is not a great thing to hope for. You don't want to hope.
Yeah.
Your best case scenario should not involve your opponent having a full board.
Yeah, because you basically, I mean, there are a lot of people running things that like the rat packs and the replicating menaces that will put 1/1s on your opponent's board, but still, yeah.
Yeah.
Technically, 1/1s are better than 3/3s, but
they can be unless they have junk bot, and then suddenly
if they've got seven things on their board, you're probably gonna have a bad time.
It's problematic, but the beast can again. Yeah. This is another very much like the boogie monster that in dire situations you can actually deploy it to kind of smooth get you over the hump of a really bad early draft to survive the mid game to get to late game.
Yeah.
Cold Light Seer is moving from Tavern Tier 2 to Tavern Tier 3. They're coming for you, Murlocs, just not super hard.
Medium hard.
Medium hard, yes. My sounds like the worst way to cook an egg. How would you like your egg? Medium hard. Gross.
Ew.
Over easy, please. Over easy. Runny yolk! Yeah, this makes a lot of sense in Primal Fin Lookout because it can't stop messing with it. Went from Tavern Tier 4 to Tavern Tier 5. Poor Lookout, just been all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is good because Murlocs are just, they are the strongest right now, and that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon.
They can still get Poisonous and Divine Shield.
And Wind Fury on everything.
And now only Curator has access to Amalgams because Nightmare Amalgam has been removed from the pool of available minions.
Yes. And this was the thing that I was talking about that kind of like turned how I think and look at Battlegrounds just completely on its head. Because, you know, before it was kind of like you get an Amalgam, possibly two if you can. And then you use those alongside whatever tribe it is that you're actually building. And everything that you're doing to buff your tribe is also going to buff your amalgams. And then you can end up with, you know, taunted, divine shield, poisonous, big beefy amalgams. And that was kind of a really good strategy for a really long time. And now it's just been literally deleted.
Yeah, and I struggle with this one. Like I get the minions power level, but it was also a lot of you know, non-Murloc drafters' only hope of fighting with the Murlocs because you can get the poisonous on board. And now I need more time, really, because I don't think we can as a community say, well, if someone else goes Murlocs, I can't anymore. It's too dangerous. I'm not saying hate draft, but I'm saying we all just need to try and splash a little Murlocs in our builds to just stop someone from going whole hog.
Yeah, and I had this conversation about Nightmare Amalgam on Twitter because I saw this change, and obviously my first thought went to Curator because now Curator and essentially Murloc builds are going to be the ones that are going to be the most powerful because they're going to have access to poison. And then people on Twitter came back to me and said, well, yeah, but anyone can grab a Murloc and give it poisonous. I'm like, yeah, but they're going to have a downside that the Murloc builds aren't going to have, in that they have to save one slot on their board for their poisonous Murloc and then one slot on their board that's space for a battle cry in order to give a Murloc poisonous. So that's just a sacrifice that Murloc builds don't have to make. They don't have to make room on their board for another tribe. they can just go with a fully synergistic build. So Garrett, I'm curious, because you have much more experience than I do with auto chesty type things, with a limited build space, like with the 7 slots on your board, is saving 1 to 2 of those for something that doesn't synergize with what you're trying to do, is that enough of a detriment to the point that Murlocs are just going to be like the best way to play this game right now?
I do think you are being a little rigid in, or let's say, I think you're being maybe approaching your board as too precious. Because there is a lot with a lot of different draft strategies right now in Battlegrounds. There's a lot of late game selling and buying single minions, because you're putting in a what's the zappy wind fury Flipwick, whatever the hell his name is. Who's the
the 7 guy that the 7 attack guy that targets your lowest lowest attack minion? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of tier 6 minions that are not particularly great on their own, and they're not the kind of things that you really chase a triple on unless you kind of catch a wave. So you're buying them for like a single round, or like if you get into that final round territory where it's you and one other player and you actually have more than one round against them, that's where you take the information from your previous round and you apply it and kind of change your board up. Zap Slywick, damn it, stupid name. I hate this dude's name. But I love what he does, because sometimes he is the right call. But there's, to me, the better I've gotten at Battlegrounds, the more I am, there's almost always one minion going in and out like almost every single damn turn late game, unless I am doing something. And even with Murlocs, I'm usually buying and selling, because you're wanting to still stack your battle cries. So even in Murlocs, there's probably a 7th minion you don't really actually care about.
So that solves the 2 slots. So the one, or like the 1 slot for potentially, you know, like needing a space to actually play the battle cry minion. But what about that poisonous Murloc? Because the thing with amalgams is they still synergized with whatever it was that you were trying to do. It didn't matter what you were building. If you, for instance, buffed the attack of all your mechs, that amalgam would get the buff too. So if you're saving a spot for something that isn't in your tribe and doesn't synergize just so you can get your poisonous, then is that 1 slot on your board problematic? Or like does it put you behind somebody who's all Murlocs get synergy across 6 slots instead of 5?
It can. It's definitely an it depends type situation. There's also Myaxta, which is a single card.
True. Yeah.
Comes with poisonous that you can just splash onto your board late game when Murlocs so are kinda the most problematic.
Yeah. Honestly, Myaxta made me think that maybe beasts are the new tier 2, like if you're or not, maybe not 2, but like if you think Murlocs are 1, then who's going to come 2nd to Murlocs? And I think it's maybe still because
mech, because of Kobold Guardian, Divine Shield juggling, it is a strategy to get around the upside of poison. Because if your Kobold Guardians are buffed enough that they're actually killing the Murlocs, it doesn't really matter that they have poisonous, because your divine, not only do you have divine shields,
your divine shield soaks it. Yeah,
your divine shields. The other way to get around it is with Death Rattle synergy. Frankly, if you have strong enough death rattles. So you're
saying Sky Golem?
I am saying Sky Golem. Yes! This, yeah, I was not baiting you. I am saying Sky Golem. Now, Death Rattle is, I think, one of the more difficult synergies to pull off.
Demons, yeah, I think demons that, I'll are be honest. Doomed.
Like, demons need some demons.
Poor demons. But yeah, no, I like Death Rattle, but it is a harder style to play, I think. Just because of the randomness and board space. Things can die before you want them to. Things can, you know, create too many things, and then maybe you don't get the minion that you want. And because you just run out of board space. It's definitely, I think, one of the harder play styles, but I think it's super fun. But I like random on top of my random, so.
Yeah. So, there's... I think a decent number of counter options. You could also just pick Rafam, who wasn't removed from the game, and still curator's amalgam, and you're fine.
That's true. Bran was, though.
Bran was removed. And so, and this is like my almost to the level of my rogue bone to pick in the
lack of any rogue nerfs. I just can't believe they're not doing anything about Rafam. Rafam seems... Yeah,
Bran just got here too, guys.
Busted. I mean, Bran was like right under Rafam as far as I was concerned for power level. And now Bran is gone and Bartendotron is replacing him.
Which, Bartender Ron?
Bartender Ron, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the emailer that Nate called him that? Oh, it doesn't matter. It was wonderful. That's all I can think of now when I see Bartendotron. It's Bartender Ron. I'm just so hung up on Rafam, because to me, Rafam is just the most insane hero we've ever had in Battlegrounds.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they've been updating Battlegrounds every few weeks. I expect Rafam will rotate out, probably see some changes, rotate back in. The only thing that I kind of wish with all of this, because they are essentially keeping the pool of 24 heroes the same. And I agree with the portions of the community that have been asking, and I think Garrett, you are on the same page here possibly, but I do agree with the people who have essentially been saying, I wish we just had all the heroes all the time, like let's pick from a bigger than 24 pool, because sometimes, or well, a lot of the times, you know, I had Bran in my lobby. I had AFK. I had, you know, now Rafam. It's like there were a very specific set of heroes that were like top tier and you'd see them every time. But if you had a pool that was larger than what the eight people, assuming that they have all their unlocks and are getting three heroes each. So basically, as soon as you get over that 24 hero mark, that means that sometimes you're not going to get AFK offered to anybody. You're not going to get Rafam offered to anybody. And then that just varies the lobby a little bit. So Garrett, where do you land on the hero pool?
I think you're confusing me with Trixler, who brought it up when we had him on the show.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And I said, well, as the resident unluckiest person ever, that actually scares me a little because higher chances of having three bogus choices while a much larger amount of the players that you're going up against got significantly more powerful choices across the board. That being said, I would really like to just see them try it and let's just see how it feels in application. Maybe even let us mulligan heroes. How cool would that be?
Which is something you could do with a pool.
You would have to have
there are
pool.
Some, you'd have to have at least eight kind of in the wings. If you said, you know, you can choose one hero to mulligan, then you'd have to have one hero available for each person in the lobby to pull from, because you can't have duplicate heroes. So they're still, I think, a couple of heroes away from that. But they seem to have a lot in development in the wings. So I wouldn't be surprised if they hit that breakpoint of 32 sooner rather than later. But yeah, I'd like to see them at least maybe experiment with that somehow, because I do find my Battlegrounds lobbies can get a little bit samey. Now, the frequency of these updates has helped that from, you know, being something that happens all of the time. Like, I'm not stuck in something for 2 months of the same Battlegrounds lobbies because the changes just happen so quickly. But I'm on board with them playing around with the hero pool, and we're still in beta. So, I mean, the way that things work now isn't necessarily the way they're always going to work. So, I mean, Nightmare Amalgam, obviously, is an example of that. Yeah.
I just need more time with that. I honestly, like, I'm really conflicted in my feelings about that, because I kind of liked the flex it gave other strategies, but time will tell.
Yeah.
I would just like, and I don't want him to remove Rafam. I feel like his hero power should be 2 gold or something.
Just make it a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. I like the 2 gold idea, because you don't want to make it 3, because then it's just the cost of a minion. So then you might as well have just bought the minion yourself, right?
Unless
so
it should still. Next turn is against AFK on turn 3 or Curator ever.
Yeah.
And then it's totally worth it. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure. Battlegrounds just boggles my mind. I love thinking about it. I love thinking about how these changes affect the game. I like seeing it. I sadly have not gotten to log very much time in Battlegrounds since this went live. I mean, we are pre-recording this episode, so we've had like a day, but
yeah, a day exactly.
it's been a week here. We've had some construction in Wine's Earl studio. It's been a little rough. So anyways, that's it. That's pretty much everything. Bran out, Bartendotron in, or Bartender Ron, depending on who you are. Get out there, enjoy some Battlegrounds. I'm excited to see how this feels, how it feels living in a post-amalgam Battleground.
Yep.
It'll be good. It'll be good. So with that in mind, let's get to your questions, everybody, in this week's email segment.
Hello.
Hello, it's me.
Hello.
Just quickly, do you get my message?
Yep.
Oh.
Hello, brother.
You can send your emails to tacpodcast@gmail.com, or if you're a patron, congratulations, you have access to the patron-only Discord. Drop us messages in there, skip the inbox entirely, which is what Adam B. did. Adam says, Christmas wish list, one card you would like to see go, one card you would like to see come back, and one dream card you wish they would make. I never liked the making a card question.
Yeah, the making a card questions are really tough. I mean, outside of thinking of maybe, you know, Warcraft characters that haven't been made in the game yet. So obviously I think Kael'thas is a big one of like, where is he?
Kael'thas is at the tippy, tippy top of my list. And also I would like to see a Paladin Arthas card.
Mm. Yeah, we got the Paladin Arthas hero, but we didn't get a Paladin Arthas card.
I feel like you should have some sort of baked in consecration type effect. Something that kind of harkens back to like the Culling of Strathholm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, fire. Like it's a consecration effect, but it's a little more fiery. Like
yeah, embery, that would be cool.
You know, maybe don't go too far. Maybe don't have like screaming
children. Screaming townsfolk. But,
yeah. Okay, never mind. Maybe I do like these questions.
But yeah, I think Kael'thas would be really cool. And I mean, for him, it would probably have to be something like with a death rattle, right? Because, you know, death is merely a setback. He comes back more powerful than ever before.
Ooh, uh-huh. He comes back as his like zombie form with like the crystal impaled in his chest, like the five-man dungeon before Sunwell. That'd be great. That would be wonderful. Yeah. Okay, never mind. I love your question, Adam B. Thank you.
No, but I mean, it is kind of difficult to think, you know, like we're not obviously card designers, so.
Yeah.
But I can definitely think of Warcraft characters that I would like to see made.
One card I would like to see go. Why is Boar still in this game?
Ooh.
Why is Stuntus Boar still in this game? Like in what universe? Like why? Why?
That's so funny because when we were talking earlier on and we were talking about Faceless Corruptor, you brought up Ziliax, and that is 100% my answer for this, the card that you'd like to see go.
No,
like,
come on.
I am fine. So ready for that thing to rotate out. It's like, it is fine. It's balanced. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just sick of it.
We are at the tail end of it.
Everyone plays it.
Maximum Ziliax burnout should be peaking right around now.
Yeah.
Because we're probably 3 months away from the next standard year.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm ready for it to rotate out. I've had enough of it. I understand the need for neutral, like heal, neutral anti-aggro. I get it. But I just don't like it. And maybe it's that it more than anything else is magnetic. I think that's the thing that bugs me the most. Like just a rushing 3-2 with lifesteal is fine. But I feel like because it's also magnetic that sometimes it's just that much more punishing if you want to try an aggro playstyle, that it just feels like, okay, if I don't kill you by turn 5, which they've kind of made that really hard for aggro decks to do. You have to draw the absolute nuts in order to kill somebody by turn 5. That's still pretty early. And if you don't,
Jocelyn does not like drawing nuts. In art class, she was very mad when the teacher came in and said, "Today you are drawing nuts."
No.
No. Come, it's Christmas season. You get a nice bowl of chestnuts. You do a nice little still life. Wonderful.
But yeah, so I just feel like, you know, that Ziliax, because of his magnetic, can often be more of a wall and more of a heel than, you know, he maybe has the right to be. And I'm just sick of playing against him.
I haven't gone up against the mech hunter. Are they magneticing the Ziliax?
Mech hunter?
Okay. All right. I'm like, where is this coming from? I haven't seen this. I haven't gone up against the mech hunter. I think since the first week
they're
of
gross.
Dragons. But
like gross in a good way that I think they should exist in the game. It's just, I'm ready to see a post Ziliax standard world.
What card would you like to see come back?
I think we're probably going to agree on this one because it's also part of the conversation that we had around Doom in the Tomb when that was originally leaked. But for me, Lotheb. I love Lotheb. Mm. That was a really good body that could be used by everybody, that had a really cool effect that we haven't seen since outside of Rebuke and Paladin, that never really went anywhere because it wasn't also tied to a bit of a tempo swing. It's just a spell, right? So I think Lotheb, I think, has a lot of uses, and I would really like to see him come back.
I'm with you on that. I think it's probably historically my favorite ubiquitous card.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, your Azure Drakes, your Ragnaroses, your Sylvanases of the world. I think Lotheb is one of the most interesting. And just what you could do with him, the strategies you could upset if you had a greater knowledge of the Hearthstone meta, was really, really awesome.
That's the thing, because you could just slam him on curve, but if you knew that your opponent was trying to do something crazy big and combo-y at some point. I mean, back when Lotheb was around, it was the kind of like...
It was Miracle
Rogue. Force of Nace... Huh?
Miracle Rogue.
Oh, okay. Miracle I was going to say huge. Force of Nacer and Savage Roar. Like, you could basically stop a druid from killing you if you Lothebed at the correct time.
Yeah, we don't really live in a Miracle Rogue world anymore, so I'm kind of curious, like, how effective would he really be? And I'm not seeing Malagos decks right now either. Traditional Malagos, not new Malagos. So it'd be interesting. It's a card that's so interesting to me and feels like it could just be in the base set of Hearthstone.
Yes. Yeah. Like it feels very classic.
That void. Yeah. The first card that popped in my mind was Sylvanas, and she came back with the last event. And I love the puzzle that she puts on the board. I really do. I was kind of sad to see her leave. I was not sad to see the Ragnaros leave. I do like Ragnaros, but I had had enough of the RNG that Ragnaros brought. But Sylvanas is the type of RNG that I really, really like.
Me too. I like playing both with and against her because I find, like you said, it's fun to play around with the puzzle and to figure out if you can, you know, if you've got an empty board and you can, or you can empty your board before you kill her, or, you know, how to load your board to get the potential, you know, RNG and the chances into your favor, then that's the kind of stuff I like playing around with and I want to see more of. So I think I like Sylvanas. I always have been a fan of her. I think that a lot of people know a lot better of how to play around her than we did, you know, maybe originally, but I don't necessarily think she still deserves to be banished to the world of Wild. I think she could definitely come back for good. And the other thing about the event is that she didn't get, you know, I didn't see her all that often because everyone was evolved shamaning. And I feel like because that was the meta, that some of the other cards that came back, you know, they were in decks and you saw them every once in a while. But yeah, I didn't play against nearly as much Sylvanas as I might have wanted to, and also I didn't play as much standard as I might have wanted to because of the way the event meta kind of went. So
if
I'd like to see them try it again, but not the way they did.
So if you're saying that Sylvanas has been banished to Wild, are you saying that this Wild is a prison? No.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean I get the reference, a bit of a stretch, but yeah.
Thanks, Jazz. Selfishly,
I got the reference.
Selfishly, I just really want Muster for Battle back because I love tokens. And that was like the first time I liked making tokens, playing lots of little things in Hearthstone. That's why, even though I got shame for it, that's why I liked Midrange Paladin so much. Look at you, Regis. He's calling me basic for enjoying my Midrange Paladin. But I miss Muster for Battle, or I would like a card like that. Outside of the odd even insanity that we had for a while there, you know, give me just like make a bunch of dudes, give me a pathetic little weapon and let's make something happen with it. Like it's why I like white so much in Magic. Like I really, really have always gravitated towards white in Magic because I like making lots of little tokens. There's something about that I find very enjoyable. And I've never really liked the way Druid does it.
I was just going to bring that up. I was like, I've never heard you talk about Token Druid the way you talk about generating tokens in Paladin. And why is that?
I don't know. I loved that Muster was just here's a shit ton of tokens and a hilariously sad weapon, but you're going to make something happen with it because the meta worked. The meta we ran at the time, it worked for that. And I don't know. I feel like Token Druid has always relied a little too much on spell synergy for my liking, whereas the mid-range deck, because of things like Shield of Minibot and the Pilot Shredders at the time, you weren't entirely dependent on just your 1-1 tokens, the stick and then buff, right?
Mm.
Post GVG meta, getting into like more modern day token druids where it's like, make a big board, and if you can't buff it that turn, you cross your fingers and pray. Like that's I don't love that as much. And that's the challenge, I think, of token, and always is going to be in Hearthstone, because we have a 7 minion limit. And then in Magic, you just keep making tokens.
Yeah.
You start drawing on post-its to, like, all right, this is a 1-1 angel with flying. This one has vigilance. Because you just start running out of actual token cards at a certain point. But anyway, sorry. Trip down down memory lane. But yeah, I'm frankly, if I could just give a +2 vote to Lotheb, if that'll help, I'll go for
I thought you might. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Jocelyn knows how to make me vote for things she wants to see happen. Who's our next question from?
This one comes to us from Rakamar, who also thought it would be a nice time to take a look back. And he says, what are your favorite 3 decks across all of Hearthstone's history? So, I mean, I feel like this came up within the last couple of weeks too, but Mechmage for me, Mechmage was the kind of deck that made me really start to fall in love with Mage. I mean, Mage is kind of the first class I gravitated towards anyways, because it's kind of the way the game pushes you right off the get-go through the tutorial and stuff. So I kind of was playing Mage anyways, and then I really liked Mechmage because I liked putting a lot of stuff on the board and fighting with minions. I mean, as much as that's kind of been Hearthstone's, at least the thing that Hearthstone's always aimed for is really interesting minion combat, and that's why they moved away from charge and into rush instead. I really think that kind of resonates with me as a card game player too. I really like doing that. I like making minions and then smacking them into other minions.
Yeah. Obviously, mid-range paladin is up there for me because that was like the first deck like I mained and like really learned the ins and out ofs. And again, I just love muster for battle. Mechmage is probably one of my least favorite decks of all time, actually.
Oh, really? Well, yeah.
So draw dependent. And I always had horrible luck with it.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I'm kind of cranky about this rogue deck, because you know what? It feels very similar. It's super draw dependent.
Yeah.
If you get it, it's just like, oh, well, I guess that just happened. And if you don't, It's not great.
I think also I would say Handlock.
Oh, they took one of mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I thought we were just having okay. No, well, we could both say Handlock though.
Yeah, Handlock is definitely one of mine. I just thought it was cool. Like,
yeah, when I say Handlock, I mean like first original like iteration of Handlock, because I feel like there's been lots of kind of hybrids ever since that, and it's kind of an archetype that has come in and out of favor and has had some, you know, new additions from different expansions and stuff. But I feel like first original Handlock, I really enjoyed, you know, watching competitive players play it. I remember Karma used to play it all the time, and I loved watching her stream because I felt like Handlock players were just so skilled at the game, and I would just watch them and try to learn as much as I could. It was the first deck, I think, where I didn't play it, but I used it to try to learn more about how to play the game, if that makes sense. It was just like there were some next level strategic plays and, you know, ways to use your resources that just wasn't necessarily the way I was thinking about playing the game at the time. So yeah. Original OG Handlock.
God. Now that I think about it, there's like some Handlock is up there for me. Freaking. Jocelyn, I think I might be a degenerate.
I can confirm.
because. Ooh, mid-range shaman. You remember?
Oh, so like you remember
post Karazhan mid-range shaman, like Totem Golem, Tuskar, Totemic, Thunderblood, Valiant, Tunnel Trog.
When the Totem Golem could still come out of that guy, when you could play the 3-2 and get the 3-4, and it was like, what?
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot about it. Just popped into my brain because I'm like looking through old cards right now. Like I'm flipping through, like trying to jog my memory. This was like the dawn of Shaman Stone. This is the first time we started using that term. But if you remember during beta, Shaman was the first class I fell in love with because I was, you know, coming from a pretty light magic background because I had only been playing magic for a couple of years at the time. And I was just like, you draw cards. Oh, is there something to say draw a card? You want to draw the card, play the card that draws the card, draw cards. And I was like, I cracked open like my first packs ever in Hearthstone and I got Mana Tide Totem. I'm like, clearly this is the best class in the game because they have a card that just draws cards. Why would you not want to play Shaman? Also, hilarious considering what we're dealing with right now, but I thought Spirit Wolves was bananas back in the day. Like two threes for one card? What? Mm-hmm. What? And now I can have 2 5-6s for one card, but you know.
Yep.
Those were the time. Back in my day, you young whippersnappers. Let's just call this entire segment Boomer Hearthstone.
Yeah. How's that sound? Actually, all of this kind of conversation is kind of leading a little bit into Rocket Sauce's question. So do you want to just read that one and then we can kind of continue down this meta path?
Yeah, except I also need to shout out Dragon Priest because that's up there for me too. Like OG Dragon Priest, because that was the first ever time we got the heroic tavern brawl, the Brawliseum. And I took Dragon Priest into it and I think I had an 8 win run.
Yeah, you did pretty well with Dragon Priest.
Yeah, it was that was my jam. That was a big main that deck for me. Sorry, but Secret Paladin and Odd Paladin. Most paladins.
Yeah, if there's a paladin deck, Garrett loves it.
yeah. Anyways, feel free to read the next question because we are dipping into it.
Yeah. Oh,
it's Rocket Sauce. Sorry.
Rocket Sauce is you.
It feels like a good time to potentially revisit Garrett and Joss's quick personal history of Hearthstone. Do you remember the different metas leading you to your past and present class favorites? I guess I kind of.
Yeah, you kind of definitely went into this a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, I have like the most wins with Paladin. I have no 1,000 portraits and I have very few 500 win portraits, frankly. Because if you can't tell by the fact that I do a hero show, a Hearthstone show, I'm a guest on a World of Warcraft show. I just launched my own World of Warcraft show. And I've also in the past done an Overwatch show. I play most of the Blizzard games. So I split my time a lot.
Yeah.
But Paladin, I'm getting there. I will eventually hit that 1,000 win portrait. Paladin's just kind of always been there for me. And I think
that's how I feel about Hunter.
Yeah, Hunter, you love Hunter.
Yeah. Hunter, I think I gravitated to fairly quickly, and it didn't necessarily have anything to do with any specific meta. I'll be completely honest. I can't remember if I even played Undertaker Hunter. I think I probably did because I was just playing a lot of Hunter. So it would make sense for me to have done that. But that, guys, that was like 6 years ago. Okay. It's a long time. I'm old. My memory's failing. I can't remember if I actually played Undertaker Hunter or not. I imagine that I did. But it wasn't necessarily a meta that led to that. It was actually World of Warcraft because my first character and the character that I played all the way through that I left Hunter for Paladin for a little bit, but I'm back with Hunter again, you know, raiding in current WoW content on my Hunter. And it was the class that made a lot of sense to me because of my history in World of Warcraft. It had a lot of cards and spells that I recognized the names of, and kind of, especially very, very early on in vanilla Hearthstone, really just resonated with me and made a lot of sense to me because the way that, like, they did a really good job, I think, with the like OG design to emulate a lot of what World of Warcraft did in terms of those different classes. So I felt like I played World of Warcraft, I played Hunter, I came into Hearthstone and I was like, oh, this all makes sense. This plays like my Hunter. So that's kind of how I chose my favorite class. And I think Hunter still probably is my favorite class. I play it a little bit less because I am trying to hit my 500 on all of my classes. So I've kind of been trying to spread my attention around. But even so, even by trying to completely stop playing Hunter after my 500 wins and get everybody else up to snuff, I still have almost 700 wins on my hunter because I just keep going back to it every once in a while and being like, oh, I'm so sorry I left you. Hunter, hunter, hunter. Okay, no, enough. This is bad for both of us.
This is me and Paladin. You're describing my relationship with Paladin.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some classes like I just don't like. Like historically, I have avoided Warrior, Mage, and Rogue like the plague. And Druid is close. I don't really care for Druid that much either.
So Trolden actually wrote in and asked what your favorite deck is from your least favorite class. So you just mentioned your least favorite classes. Do you have any redeeming deck that you can pick out of those four that you actually had fun playing?
Well, Warrior, very recently, the Aggro Warrior from post Descent of Dragons, I was giddy with excitement. That's how much I enjoyed it. I just thought it was so cool to finally be doing something other than just loading up armor and being a dick. I hate Warrior, man. I really hate Warrior.
Oh my God, I can tell.
Yeah, like it's not just never been my jam, which you think I would like it. If Handlock is like up there for a deck I love playing, you would think like meticulous long ass
control warrior. Yeah.
But no, I've tried so many times to get into Warrior and it has never been my jam. But I really fell in love with Aggro Warrior last meta, and I'm really liking where they're going now. The problem is they don't get there versus Rogue. All of my biases are laying bare now. It's like, why was Garrett so cranky about the Rogue? Oh, he wants Warrior to be a thing.
Because he wants to play Warrior. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I can hit everything. It's irrelevant. If the Rogue gets that apothecary out on curve. So yeah, I've always kind of mained. Like I've never been one of those players. I don't know. I don't look at multi-class like esports in Hearthstone and like aspire to do that. I have a lot of personal disinterest in that because I like maining. I like spending a lot of time with one class at a time. And there's also, like I said, multiple classes that I legitimately am not drawn to. It's kind of like blue in Magic. I do not like blue in Magic. Katie loves it.
That's spell-based stuff, right?
Technically, all colors have spells. But you basically get to cheat, in my opinion, with blue.
Oh, like, okay. Really, my Magic knowledge is very minimal, so I really thought I knew that thing about blue.
Blue is oddball, man. It's kind of it reminds me a bit of Rogue, where most of the classes in Hearthstone operate within very similar rule sets of curve and mana and how it functions. And then Rogue plays 7 cards in a turn. You're like, what the hell just happened to me? Blue can kind of feel like that in Magic.
Rogue and Priest are probably my two least favorite classes. And I feel like that's pretty much been the same across all of the history of Hearthstone. With the exception, when it comes to Priest, I really liked Spiteful Summoner Priest. That was one of my favorite decks. I played a lot of that deck. And then like Rogue wise, I've always found like Miracle Rogue style, especially once like Myra's came in and all that kind of stuff. Like it's a very interesting play style, but Garrett, like you say, with Rogue, like I've always struggled to wrap my head around it because it is super complicated and they can have these turns where it's like, okay, you've got 2 minutes to figure out how to play out your whole entire hand, and if you can do it, you win, and if you can't, then you know you're terrible. And I feel like Rogue is the least forgiving class, so you know, me coming to this game the way that I did with no card experience, I looked at Rogue and I was like, oh my God, this, I don't understand this, I can't play this, it's too hard. And I never kind of mentally got past that block, and I haven't given Rogue a lot of time or, you know, headspace, even though we are so far into Hearthstone at this point. I still have this like mental block when it comes to Rogue, and it's like, even when it's super powerful, I'm like, nah, I can't play Rogue.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at Rogue.
I've just never been a particularly large fan of combo decks. I like the ebb and flow of a deck that allows me to be proactive versus reactive and to
move in and out of those two ways of play throughout a singular game of Hearthstone. So when I play combo decks, I don't really like the kind of solitaire-esque feel of it. Holy Wrath Paladin's a good exception to that. I did rather enjoy my time with it last meta.
Probably because it was Paladin. If that was in it any was other Paladin. Class,
no, you're
probably,
right. You're right. Yeah. But Priest is a good example where, like, Priest, like, if my original trifecta used to be like Shaman, Warlock, Paladin. Those were like the three that I loved, that I played the most. But I've always had a little bit of a thing going on the side with Hunter and Priest. Like, Hunter is just when I'm like, all right, F it. Whatever my cute aggro strategy is in Shaman or Warlock, it isn't working out. It's time to go beat faces in with Hunter. It's where I was, you know, I just kind of want to throw some bows. Literally.
Hunter doesn't mind being your side priest, side beast.
And then Priest has been like, over the history has been like this side passion of mine. But again, I don't know what my problem is with Warrior. I don't know why I don't like Control Warrior, because my favorite priest has outside of Dragon Priest has been Control Priest. I don't like Combo Priest. It is not my favorite. Back in the day when everyone was like joking about Unicorn Priest and there was that whole meme about it and everyone was like, Priest doesn't work, I loved playing Control Priest. Absolutely loved it. I loved mind control and just constantly clearing boards and stealing shit from my opponent. And they've moved away from that. And the more they've moved away from that, the more I have moved away from Priest.
Yeah.
So I know there's some people still out there trying to make it work, but like Control Priest was always like my hipster deck. Like, I want to feel unique and like I'm going against the grain. So I'm going to hit the ladder with some Control Priest. But really, recently Warlock has fallen off for me. I have not enjoyed Warlock archetypes in a while. I've fallen off of Mr. Gul'dan, even though in the early days, probably the first 2 to 3 years of Hearthstone, it was right there with Paladin and Shaman in terms of, of my class cycle.
Fair enough. Well, I'm going to do one more really quick question because I know you have to get going very soon, but I do want to mention, I know Star Wars.
We're going to see Star Wars.
I've already seen it. So this question comes just from Kilmarnock, who says, with 2019 coming to a close and Team 5 putting out constant updates, is it too soon to talk about the Forbidden mode as a potential for late 2020, early 2021? One might say that recent Hearthstone history has given me a new hope. Winky face.
Forbidden mode is, let's see, Forbidden mode would be, is that arena with sideboards?
No, that's tournament mode.
Is it draft? Oh, tournament mode. Oh.
Tournament mode. Oh, I thought, you know, we've been really good about not talking about it too much, but I think this is a really good question because it does seem like they are iterating at a faster pace and that maybe 2019 Team 5 is more open to experimenting and putting things out that the community wants. So I don't think it's as off the table as I did when they canceled it. When they canceled it, I thought there's no point in ever talking about this ever again because obviously they're not going to do it. And I'm feeling a little bit differently now.
I don't think we're getting it.
Fair enough.
This is my kind of thought. I think we're, I don't know. I'm not bummed about it because I built a wall around my heart.
Yeah.
And it has a sign that says keep out tournament mode hope.
Aww.
They can't figure out what they want their esport to be. Like, they've got, I don't know. I've got a lot of grumbles about competition in Hearthstone. And that's one of them. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's, what do we want?
Okay, so part of me is kind of holding out a little bit of hope here because we also haven't heard, this is the latest it's ever gone, and we know we're not going to hear anything in 2019 because the Hearthstone team has left the building. So there will be no more major announcements in 2019. We still haven't heard definitively what 2020 is going to look like for Hearthstone esports. We had an announcement at the beginning of December in 2018 that told us about Grandmasters and everything else. We haven't gotten that yet. We kind of assume that there will be a season three of Grandmasters, but nothing's really been confirmed. We have no dates. We have no formats. We have no nothing. Part of me is maybe holding out hope that that is going to launch alongside plans for a way for them to run their tournaments within their client. And I think that there's, you know, precedent with what they've got working over in China. There's, you know, the most recent, I think we talked about it a few weeks ago now, but the Southeast Asian Games that were able to actually like play on a tournament server. If they just kind of built everything into the client where you could, you know, pick your patch, pick your format, and then, you know, log into a tournament lobby. They're doing lobby things now with Battlegrounds. I mean, it's not necessarily the unheard of thing that it was when tournament mode was originally canceled. So maybe, hopefully, cross your fingers, I guess. I will be the hopeful one here, Garrett. I don't mind.
I'll just say, I hope you're right.
But you can tell he wants to crush me right now.
I feel like I'm being set up to be a Grinch is what I feel right now. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to. It has nothing to do with my cheery Christmas hat and your green background. Grinch like symbolism right now.
A little bit. Well, I don't have termites in my smile, at least. So,
well, that's good. We little things.
We have that going for us. I really don't know, because at this point, and it's not like I expect it to be tied like so 1-to-1. I don't think we have to have tournament mode to have an esport, or we need to know what these
or vice versa. Obviously, we don't need to because we haven't so for the much last of 5 years.
So much of at least on this podcast, so much of the conversation and the inspiration behind what we wanted tournament mode to be came from Hearthstone's esport being pretty locked into either Last Hero Standing or Conquest at the time, and us just being
best of five, basically.
Give us that or a best of mode. Personally, selfishly, I would be more excited about just a best of mode than anything else. I know a lot of people like want a really crazy like custom lobby system that allows you to really tweak a lot of things, and I think that would be awesome and crazy. And I also think it's pretty unrealistic considering how not nuanced a lot of the interface in Hearthstone is. It doesn't, nothing in Hearthstone lets us tweak anything to that level of granularity. I just don't think it's possible with how they built the game. I think that is the block there. But also, frankly, I want to just be like, hit a button, find me someone to go fight against. And I come in with my three or four decks or whatever the best of is, that really excites me, especially after dipping my toe into a Magic Arena. There's a lot of different, you know, quick pick up and play modes in there that are different formats. It's really killed any interest in Arena for me because I love their limited formats so much more over there. So I start coming back again to just like the buttons, the modes. Let's curate an experience. It's what Hearthstone already does and does very well. So to me, my desire and my hopes line up more for Hearthstone. I trust you to give me and find me a good experience. I don't need to be able to tweak each and every single piece of this experience, but give me a new one. And that's what they did with Battlegrounds. And I really like it. I can't believe we're here at the end of 2019. And I'm like, dude, my favorite game, my game of the year for 2019 is an auto chess. It is an auto battler built in the Hearthstone engine. What? Somebody go back to January 1st, 2019 and tell me this so I can tell you you're crazy. What drug are you on? Get out of my house.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, with the launch of Battlegrounds, we did get that mode button, right? So future mode development is going to go in there. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to get stuff in 2020. And I think that, you know, maybe part of that stuff will be maybe what they call tournament mode that basically boils down to being a best of mode where, you know, you go in and challenge your friends and maybe it doesn't have all of the tournament lobby stuff and, you know, all of that. But I mean, yeah, if you set competitive Hearthstone completely aside and just give people a way to play a best of mode, maybe that's the happy medium and definitely the most doable of all of the kind of possibilities that we've put out there over the years is like, just give me the same opponent multiple times in a row, please.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be really cool. Like, just imagine like BO3, and like click it, and then, you know, Conquest, Last Year Standing, or even Specialist. Like, yeah. Have a UI for a sideboard, have a UI for multi-deck selection. You know, that those are things where it's like, those are digestible interface pieces that I can picture in my mind that they can make Hearthstone, like Hearthstone-ify it. and it'll still be that really polished, clean, easy to understand Hearthstone experience that we all fell in love with. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where I go. And also selfishly, mm-hmm. It's what I would rather play.
Fair enough.
Cause we're already doing custom tournaments through Battlefy and similar platforms.
Yeah, the community has figured it out. So yeah.
Yeah. I want a curated experience from Hearthstone. I want them to give me their spin on a tournament environment. So I think that'd be really cool. Give us a little ban. It shows you their classes.
Now you're
classes.
Talking crazy talk.
It shows us their classes, like boop, 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 a bunch of circles with the class icons, and you click it, and a little red X goes through it, and the timer starts ticking down. You're like, oh, no, no, I want to switch it to Paladin. No, no, Shaman, no. Oh, wait, no, Rogue. Definitely Rogue. F Rogue. So I can just see it in my head, and it's all shiny and sparkly, and I'm excited about it. So that's what I would like to see. And frankly, Kelman, I'm with you. I think there's a lot more hope for this kind of thing because you want to talk like nimble. Like I want to just take one word from everything we talked about today and just drive it home. And like one, if I had to choose one word to describe the Hearthstone team in 2019, it would be nimble.
I can definitely agree with that.
I just had a weird blind spot for Evolve is all. That's it. That's it. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I think someone there was just like, no, I love Evolve. No.
Yeah. Or
stays.
It's just an event. Just leave it alone. We have bigger things to worry about, like launching Battlegrounds.
Yeah. Something like that. But it's been awesome. It's been crazy. And yeah. This isn't even our final episode of the year. So
mm-hmm. We still got one more for you guys.
We got one more. So keep the questions coming, everybody. If we didn't go to it today, we'll hopefully pull it and get it in the next episode. But tecpodcast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails, send those crazy game stories, or drop us a message in the patron Discord, where we can also just talk to you in real time, which is another thing we can do. So check that out if you're interested in becoming a patron, patreon.com/TAC. All I want for Christmas is patrons, Joss.
Yeah.
If you like the show, you want to support us, that's the best way to do it. And that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Speaking of our patrons, thank you so much, everyone, for supporting us. We really appreciate it. And also thank you to our producers, Declan H. and Cheesy Bob. Thank you so very much for the support, you too. And other than that, head on over to either amove.tv or youtube.com/amovetv if you want to see the entire back catalog of Angry Chicken episodes. You can watch the video version over on YouTube and see our beautiful faces. Well, one of us has a beautiful face. The other just...
We'll let you decide which one.
Oh, okay. The other just bleached their hair.
See? I actually did too, so that...
You don't know whose it is. You don't know who I'm talking about. The other has... blue eyes? You have blue eyes, right? So it's ambiguous?
I do.
Okay, cool. Sweet. Sweet. The other is... No, I got nothing else. The other likes World of Warcraft.
Oh! Shit.
Okay. Anyways, everybody. Yeah, thank you for the support. Really appreciate it. We will have an episode next week before the new year. Before we go, Jocelyn, you do all sorts of other awesome things around the web. Where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's really just the best way to find out what I'm up to. There's so many things.
Nice. You can find her streaming games and sometimes saying,
"Woo, Hearthstone!"
It's wonderful. I have an entire Joss board now. I've got
Cluck.
I've got
hype.
I've got
so hot.
Yeah,
but that's this an one, old one, man.
I forgot about
Woo Hearthstone.
I love it.
Hearthstone.
It's wonderful. It sounds like when you open a legendary. Because you go, ooh, legendary. Woo,
legendary.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I love my new soundboard because I've got Ben Brode saying,
"Everybody dies."
I missed that one. That was one of my favorites. It was great. And I can do this. Yeah, it's great. Wonderful.
Don't you have Star Wars to see?
I do have Star Wars to see, but Katie's not home yet. That's when we're leaving.
Oh, so okay. I see.
We got a little bit of time. Anyways,
I was waiting for you to just like get up and walk away and be like, it's Star Wars time. I don't care if I didn't get the job done.
You can find me at GarrettArt on Twitter, amove.tv for all the other shows. Go subscribe to WoW Killer. Go subscribe to Let's Talk About Star Wars. WoW Killer is my new show. Let's Talk About Star Wars is just doing a lot of episodes right now, which it doesn't always do. I would love some support on those shows. And that's going to do it. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday. Ham, turkey, tofu, whatever you're into, eat all of it. Drink the eggnog. Open the gifts. Enjoy a fire, even if you're in Florida. I don't know why we have a fireplace. We're going to be enjoying a fire, even though it's currently like 85 degrees outside. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season. Thank you so much, everyone, for the kind words. A lot of people reaching out lately saying hi and thanks, and we appreciate it. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Being Chicken. Until next time, job's done.
Job's done.
May the force be with you.
I'm gone!
Job's done.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.